Tea and Jeopardy with Emma Newman. There's always time for a nice cup of tea and a spot of mild peril. Well, hello there, my lovelies. I do hope you're well and haven't had your life's work recently stolen by S.H.I.E.L.D. agents. My name is Emma Newman, and I'd like to welcome you into my secret tea there for polite conversation, abject geekery, a cheeky bit of cake, and of course, a nice cup of tea. I do hope you've recovered fully from hypersleep. It can leave one feeling rather groggy. I'm delighted to welcome you into the dining area of this colony outpost, kindly loaned to us by the Weyland-Yutani Corporation. The decor is quite minimalist, and the lighting seems to have only two settings of either harsh or non-existent, but one must make the best of things. As you can see, Latimer has laid out some nice lace doilies on this white plastic table to cheer it up and make it a little more homely. Sadly, there are no windows in this part of the colony, but I can't say we're missing anything. It's a bit of a pea super out there. But never mind, we have cake, tea, and each other. What could possibly go wrong on a distant colony with intermittent transmissions capability and a tendency towards prolonged power cuts?
I'm sorry to interrupt you, ma'am, but he is here.
He, Latimer?
The cad who stole your title.
What title?
Winner of Just a Minute at the Sci-Fi Weekender, ma'am.
Oh, that title. Well, it's all in the past. Is that why you've been in such a terrible temper all morning?
Hmm.
Have the good grace to say his name, Latimer.
A Mr. Gareth Lesser Powell.
That can't be his real middle name. Hand me his calling card. Gareth L. Powell, Esquire, novelist. It doesn't say what the L is for, but I'm sure it's not lesser. It's probably lovely. Gareth Lovely Powell.
It's more likely Gareth Lowbrow Powell.
No, Gareth Lambent Powell.
Ah, Gareth Loser Powell.
Well, he wasn't, and that was the problem. Gareth Lyrical Powell.
What about Gareth Lackwit Powell?
Is that actually a word, Latimer? This is ridiculous. Show him in and for goodness sake be polite. For those of you who don't know, Gareth Powell is the author of several science fiction novels, including The Recollection and Akak Macaque, published by Solaris Books. He's had many short stories published in magazines and anthologies, and won Interzone Magazine's 2007 Reader's Poll for Best Short Story of the Year.
Mr. Gareth L. Powell, ma'am.
Hello, Gareth. Do come and sit down. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Yourself?
I'm very well, thank you. Would you like a cup of tea?
I would, yes, please.
And how do you take your tea?
With a little bit of milk and with no alien slime, please.
No alien slime? Oh, well, I'm glad that you specified that, because there is a bottle of it in the cupboard over there, but...
Well, I have noticed some dripping off the walls around here.
Oh, well, I do know that one of the engineers has a terrible cold, so it may just have been his terrible cold. I do want to reassure you that this isn't company tea, because that's awful. We've actually brought our own tea.
Oh, smashing.
And would you like a scone?
I'd love a scone, yes, please.
With jam and clotted cream?
Oh, yes. Is there any other way?
Well, it's funny you should say that, because I do need to ask you a question about this that could arguably be one of the most important questions. How do you have your scone? Do you have it jam with cream on top, or cream and then jam on top?
Do you know, in all the years of eating scones, I have never once... paused long enough to consider which was going on first. Whichever one was closest at the time, I think, gets slopped on, and then the next, yeah, and then it all goes in the mouth, but before I've even had time to consider the strategy.
Oh dear, oh dear. I won't tell Latimer that. I think you're already in his bad books, but, well, I don't know. Perhaps it would be the first thing that could make Latimer faint to hear tell of such things. In my invitation to you, I ask that you bring a curio, and I was wondering what you've brought with you.
I've brought this. It's a... might look like a slightly elongated bullet, but it is in fact a pen. And if I pop the lid off, and reverse it there. You can see the lid makes the turns into an extended handle for the pen. And this is actually a space pen, a pressurized space pen.
Ooh.
Designed in the 60s by Paul Fisher and Associates for NASA, and actually tested on manned space flights. Since then, it's turned up on the shelves of the New York Museum of Modern Art as a design classic, because it's rather sort of, it looks splendidly streamlined and silver. And this was a pen my wife bought for me on the release of my first book, which was The Last Reef and Other Stories from Elastic Press, which has since been re-released as an e-book from Anarchy Books and is available through the Angry Robot Trading Company website. But when that book first came out in hardback and paperback, she brought this for me and got my name inscribed on the side of it so that I'd have something suitably spacey to sign books with. So it's, something of a prized possession.
It's very lovely. Though I have to ask a very boring question about it.
Mm-hmm.
How easy is it to get hold of refills?
I don't know. I think you can probably get them on to interwebs. But as I only use it for signing books, I've not kind of got through too many. I do have a spare refill somewhere in the lab, but I'm not entirely sure where.
Well, that's marvellous. One of the first questions I have for you, which perhaps you can consider as I pour the tea, is the L in Gareth L. Powell.
Mm.
We've had a bit of a debate about what it might stand for. Perhaps you could put us out of our misery.
Certainly. Well, it doesn't stand for Lionheart. It doesn't stand for Lionel, doesn't stand for Llewellyn. It's actually, my middle name is Lynn, which is L-Y-N, which is the Welsh spelling. Named after my father, that was his name. And when I first started writing, I used the name Gareth Lynn Powell. My first Interzone publications are under that name. But it led to a bit of confusion. I got very tired with people saying, but isn't Lynn a girl's name? So, and are you a woman writing as a man, or are you a man masquerading as a woman, or can you just not, you know? So I just abbreviated it to L. I thought put an initial between. It looks a bit more science fiction-y, what the hey.
I see. Well, we went through a variety of possibilities: loquacious, lambent.
Yeah.
Somebody even suggested lover boy.
Oh.
Oh. Louche.
I would definitely settle for Louche.
That was my favourite, I have to admit. So we've been friends for some time now.
Yeah.
Which is why I am entirely unconcerned by the fact that you beat me by 1 point. And it's something that Paul brought up when I had him here for tea. And something that Latimer has been muttering about all morning. He's been quite bad-tempered today. But I have very fond memories of our SFX experiences and Sci-Fi Weekender experiences.
Yes, they've been smashing times.
They have, and we actually survived the gulag of SFX 3. Do you remember that?
It's burned onto my brain in...
How could we forget?
But it's not burned in fire, it's burned in ice.
Yes, it was really, really quite extraordinarily cold. But I was wondering, when I was thinking back to that time, whether those are the worst conditions you've ever had to endure overnight.
God, no.
Oh, then tell me more.
Oh, I'm thinking back to student hovels in the valleys of Wales, sleeping on a carpet that was more stickiness than actual carpet.
Ew.
With seven other people on the floor of one room. Seven other people and a rat who used to climb up and try and lick fluid from the corner of your eye.
Oh, no, what, really?
Yes. And
was this a pet tame rat?
Semi-tame, yeah. And it used to mark out the fact you were in its gang by urinating on you to spread its scent. So so that was pretty horrible. Also, I slept in a snow hole on the Brecon Beacons, which was pretty damn cold.
Yes, I can imagine.
And I made the mistake of sleeping inside a survival bag as well, putting my sleeping bag in the survival bag. So I thought that'll keep it dry.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the condensation from my body on the inside of the plastic survival bag made it just as wet as if I'd not bothered using it anyway. But Yeah, so you know, I've endured some pretty hellish conditions in my time.
Being licked by the rat as you sleep on a sticky carpet actually makes me reposition memories of the SFX3 gulag somewhat more favourably than I had before. That sounds truly awful.
Yeah, just because we're getting old, we think it was bad, but no. When we were students, that would have been luxury.
Yes, that's true. Oh, you had a carpet, luxury. When I was a student, there was 25 of us living in a pit down the end of the road. No, I won't go on. So, that weekend, SFX3, we discovered that we had a love for two very special films in common. Mm-hmm. One of which was Raiders of the Lost Ark, that was on at the time, I seem to remember. And the other is Aliens.
Yes.
And I was wondering, which of the Marines in Aliens do you identify with the most?
Ooh, good question. Depends. I don't know. It depends, like the Beatles. It depends what kind of mood you're in, which one you identify with. Or the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, or whatever. It's, because some days I jump out of bed and I'm Sergeant Pappone. What are you waiting for, sweethearts? On quite a few other days, I'm Hudson. So I particularly like being Hudson, because you get to be sarky and cynical, and you get all the best lines.
Oh, we're all fucked now.
They're coming out of the walls.
Yes, though I'd have to say I think that you're my Hicks.
Really?
Yes, because you're just so unflappable.
That's true. Although you have never seen me during a full-scale alien invasion.
That's true, and hopefully I never will, particularly considering the location for the T-Lair this time. But yes, I think that that there is something of the Hicks about you. Very solid and dependable. And
I have been told I have a calming persona.
Yes, absolutely.
Even while I might be anxious and freaking out, people around me are calmed by it.
Yes, I think that's absolutely true. I asked on the Twitters, as I am wont to do, whether there was anything that people would like to ask you, should they have the opportunity to take tea with your good self. And there were actually quite a few questions, and I'm going to break one of my own little rules and ask you more than one, because they were so fascinating.
Ask away.
Well, the first one that leapt out at me from the lovely Joe Hall was asking about the progress of the musical version of The Hunt for Red October, which I can't even say without laughing. What? What is this?
Okay, before a black helicopter arrives over my house and a crack team of Tom Clancy's lawyers leap out, there's a Bristol sci-fi group, and we meet on the last Monday of every month in Bristol for a few beers and a bit of a chin wag. There's some writers and some fans. And anyway, one night, I can't remember exactly how it started, but we were talking about musical adaptations of books and so on. And having had one or two refreshing fizzy apple drinks, I suggested a musical version of The Hunt for Red October and proceeded to regale the assemblage in my completely tone-deaf, flat and horrible singing voice with all the lyrics for the tune, like life in Russia is not perfect, we have a submarine, we're going to defect, and so on. And it went on for hours, and I can't even remember half of it. One of those nights where you just came up with brilliant stuff, but it was probably rubbish if you ever wrote it down.
Or were sober.
Yes. So it's become something of a running joke that I am working on a musical version of The Hunt for Red October, but as I say, one of these days I'm going to get disappeared by a crack team of Tom Clancy lawyers and you'll never see me again. Or it'll open in the West End and I'll be a millionaire.
Yes, it's nothing in between.
No.
Another question was about world building, and I'm having to search my memory. I think it was Kevlin who asked about this, and he said that there's obviously a huge amount of world building that takes place for your novels, but that only a proportion of it is actually fully visible. And he was wondering how much of the iceberg do we see in your novels, which I was quite interested to hear you talk about.
Okay. Well, there's two ways of me answering this question. The first one is to say that I usually, for each novel, write an awful lot of notes. I tend to write lots and lots of notes. As the idea for the book is sort of coalescing in my head, I sort of write down notes, keep them all in a big box file. So I'll end up with notes, sometimes maps of areas, sometimes little notes on scientific things of interest and or relevant, and print them all out and have them in this big box file for reference. And on my first novel, Silver Sands, for instance, I think I ended up with, it was only 50,000 word novel, so it's very short. I think I probably had more notes than I actually had novel by the end of it. There was maps of the world, the continent, the town, everything. There were notes on anaerobic bacteria and the biology of sort of single sex fish in the sea and so forth, which just in the end kind of got mentioned in throwaway lines here and there. Or the geography, just the action took place in it, and I described it, but the maps and everything never made it into the book. Mm-hmm. As a sidebar, I tend to dislike having maps in books because I think it kind of takes away a bit of imagination, and it's nice to kind of imagine the town or the country and kind of fit it all together in your head. And if you've got a sort of pencil sketched map in the front, it takes a bit of that away. Can be useful for reference when it's insanely complicated fantasy, but get back to the main point. Yes, lots of notes. Lots and lots of notes. The second way I can answer that question is to say maybe I only do the bare minimum necessary, and that's what gets in the book. But I'll leave it up to people to decide which it is.
Perhaps a combination of the two, depending on the book and the topic.
Yes.
Okay. So the last question, which was asked by a very good friend of mine called Dom, who's lovely. Hello, Dom. He asked whether you think it's part of the role of a science fiction writer to be a futurologist. And if so, what are your predictions for 100 years from now? So let's take the first part of that first.
Yeah, this is something that people have mentioned a few times, which is that sci-fi authors somehow are trying to get it right what's going to happen. They'll look back and say, oh, so-and-so predicted the jet engine, but this sci-fi writer just got it all hopelessly wrong. And you think, well, maybe that's not quite the point. There are some writers, like Charlie Stross, for instance, who obviously do an awful lot of research and put an awful lot of thinking into cutting edge development and where it's leading us and what's going to happen the day after tomorrow, and they're really trying to get it right in some ways, but for me it's been more a process of telling a story, and the future that I try and tell it in might not be the most likely in a lot of ways. I mean, my last but one novel, The Recollection, starts with an alien portal opening on an escalator in an underground station and whisking one of the characters away, so probably not going to happen. But I kind of want it to be plausible but fun enough. So the future, really, for me, is what abroad was for writers in the 18th century. It's a land where none of your readers have ever been, where you can set adventures. And the only difference is, with the future, everyone's going to get there eventually. So, yeah, I'm not trying to get it right. I'm just trying to make it plausible but entertaining. And I think the entertaining part is very important. If I wanted to get it all completely right, I guess I'd be writing a very dry, scholarly kind of extrapolation of current economic and political trends, blah, 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 blah.
Yes, an actual futurologist.
Yeah, there's not enough room for spaceships in that scenario. So.
Sadly.
So,
yeah. So, do you have any predictions for 100 years from now?
Yeah.
Putting on your futurologist hat?
Yes.
Go on then, share one with us.
I'll be dead.
That doesn't count.
I'll be happy to be proved wrong with that one. No, I don't know. I don't know. I try not to. Since I've had children, I try not to think too deeply about the future, because some of the global warming and some of the way the politics and stuff is going is deeply bloody depressing, and I'm trying to wean myself off News24 at the moment, because it just gets me cross and depressed, and I try not to think too deeply about it, because otherwise you tend to go a bit mad, because you think, ooh, have I loosed my children into this nightmare world of the future? And I just keep trying to remind myself that when I was born, and I was growing up in the 1970s and early 80s, I mean, my parents must have been watching the news and thinking, unemployment, strikes, the UK Secret Service possibly collaborating in bringing down the UK government, and Russia about to wipe us all out in nuclear Armageddon at any moment. So they must have been thinking pretty much what I'm thinking. Now, it probably goes back. There were probably Romans going, oh, have you heard about this Genghis Khan? Oh, I don't like the way this is going. I wish, oh, our poor children. So, you know, I guess that's part of parenthood. But things do look bleak sometimes, which is why I like writing about futures with spaceships in them rather than everybody living in a field worshipping electricity. So, yeah. Mm.
I think that there's a problem that's created by 24-hour news as well, that they feel, I think, the need to fill those 24 hours not necessarily with news, but kind of 5% news and 95% repetition and speculation that blows it all out of proportion.
Yeah.
And that really bothers me, that there is this kind of attitude that it has to be available 24 hours a day without seemingly the need to bring up new stuff or do more in-depth features, that it's just the same kind of thing cycling endlessly, and, oh, I can't watch it anymore, it's awful.
Wouldn't it, you like to see if they filled it up with good stuff? So, for instance, they would say, and today in travel, 4,759 aeroplane didn't crash.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I've thought about this a lot. I've thought about if I ever... I was going to say win the lottery, which would be impossible because I don't actually play the lottery, so that's just not going to happen. But if I suddenly came into a huge amount of money, then I would love to provide an alternative news service where it does not only that, but also gives kind of in-depth coverage of bad things happening in the world, but then saying, and here's what you can do to help stop this really shitty thing from happening. So, for example, doing a feature on the terrible economic situation in a particular country and then saying, there's this really wonderful thing called Kiva where you can make microloans to farmers in this region who are not being helped by anybody else in the world, and they are hardworking people who just want to expand their very small business. You can do this right now. And then going back to it a week later and saying, here are all of the people's lives that you have changed in a positive way. Yay, brilliant. Now, here's another really shitty thing that's going on. But this is what we can do about it. And nothing like that happens these days. It's all just seemingly designed to keep us terrified and miserable and buying more shit. And it really pisses me off. I'm terribly sorry. I seem to have ranted in the middle of tea. How rude. Perhaps I'll pour myself another cup hurriedly.
After our hellish 8-hour odyssey to Eastercon, when we got stuck on that closed motorway, I've become somewhat used to your rant.
Oh dear, was I awful?
Yeah, no, not at all. But I think we were both having a bit of a rant towards the end of being stuck behind the same lorry for 4 hours.
Oh God, that was the most horrendous journey, wasn't it?
But I think it was a very good sign that we managed to get through it without a crossword between us.
We did, it's true. And you are an excellent shotgunner, if that's the right... Can I say shotgunner? You rode shotgun?
Yeah, I didn't shotgun anybody.
No, but you rode shotgun with superb skills there, sir.
Yeah.
And particularly, you know, very good passing of travel suites. Yeah. I like that.
That is...
It's a very important skill.
That is one of my skill sets.
It was a good trip, actually.
Yeah.
We'll have to do that again.
A lot better on the way back when it only took a third of the time.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, dear. So, I was going to ask you about a particular monkey as well that everybody is very fond of, and people wondering about the sequel and where your books are and things like that. But before we talk about the monkey, I just have to say... which you've heard me say this 100 times at various events we've been to together, that everybody has to read The Recollection because it's brilliant. And I love that book. It's just one of my favourite space operas ever.
Thank you.
You're allowed to talk about The Monkey now. I still haven't read Akak Macaque yet, which is very bad and wrong of me, but my to-be-read pile is just disgustingly high. But I've heard fabulous things about it, and my other half has read it and he loved it.
Good.
You've got another one coming out called Hive Monkey, is that right?
That's right, yes. We're midway between the two books now, being June, because Akak came out in January 2013 and Hive Monkey comes out in January 2014. So we're exactly halfway through. I've finished writing it and turned it into the publisher, so they've got it now. So I expect I'll get some some notes back from them at some point, but otherwise it's done and dusted. It feels odd talking about it still being 6 months in the future, because for me it's finished now and I'm going on to work on something else, so it feels past. I have to keep, when I'm on Twitter, not talking about it in the past tense, but talking about it in the future tense. Remembering that only three people in the entire universe have actually read it. So nobody's going to get all these jokes I make about it. But yes, it's a direct sequel to Akak Makak. It features the monkey, obviously, otherwise it'd be fairly pointless. But it also features some of the other major characters from that book. I won't say which ones, because that might be spoilers for anyone who hasn't read the first one.
Yes, and I haven't read it yet, so don't spoil it.
No spoilers, my spoiler-free pitch. So it takes the events from that book and just pushes the throttle up another couple of notches. The cover illustration's been knocking around on Amazon and the Solaris site for a little while.
It's brilliant. I love that cover.
Somebody said the other day it looks like Tarantino with monkeys. for people who haven't seen it, it's the monkey with an eye patch, only instead of in the first book he was wearing a aviator jacket and leather cap and flying goggles, in this one he's traded that in for a very smart white suit with a white tie and a white shirt and a bandolier and a pair of pistols. He looks somewhat gangsterish. He's the Soprano of the monkey's world.
So does this mean that you're going to have to acquire a white suit? Because I have seen you in an aviator outfit.
That's very true. I hadn't thought of that. Because, yes, I thought it would be a really good idea to turn up for the book launch of Akak dressed in an aviator. So I brought a flight suit and a leather jacket with a fur collar and oh God, it was hot. Fur and goggles and gloves and boots. And I was in it for about 2 minutes. And I was like, oh God, can I take this off now?
But it looked so good.
Yes. I felt a right prat walking through London dressed in it, though.
So I know that Akak Makak started life as a short story, and I just remembered that someone else asked on the Twitters if you plan to write any more short stories in that world.
Well, never say never. I've got no plans at the moment, but I have no plans to write a novel about him, let alone two. So you never know where he's going to pop up next. I did last December write a 5-page comic strip for 2000 AD about him, which was a little prequel to the novel. Mm-hmm. Which, for me, was just a childhood, one of my oldest childhood dreams come true. That's amazing. I've still got my 1979 2000 AD annual on my bookshelf, and so many years later, to actually have the Christmas edition with something what I writ in it was just astounding. I was looking for Emmett Brown in the phone book. I wanted to get up to 88 miles an hour and go and show my 8-year-old self and go, check this out, it's us, we did it. Oh, I just would have gone mental. So far he's appeared in a short story, a comic strip and two novels, so you never quite know when he's going to pop up next.
Well, the tea has almost gone, the scones are, well, there are but crumbs and dollops of cream. You need to catch a certain shuttle. I think that Latimer has very kindly arranged passage for you on a medical shuttlecraft. I don't know the details, but I'm sure he'll show you the right way so that you can get back home.
Sounds lovely.
Marvellous. Well, thank you. What was that? What was that?
That was the monkey. No, go away. No more bananas. Get back in the box.
Get back, damned monkey.
Yes, get this monkey off my back.
Do take care and have a safe journey.
Thank you.
This way, Mr. Powell.
See? No hard feelings, Latimer. Is he on his way?
He's going into the shuttle now, ma'am.
Wonderful. What was wrong with that colonist?
He was hugged by one of the natives and suffered an allergic reaction, ma'am.
Poor chap. Can we see Gareth? I just want to make sure he gets away safely.
Of course, ma'am. If you'd like to turn your attention to the screen.
Oh yes, there he is, and the patient in the corner. Is there a doctor on board?
That was the doctor, ma'am.
Oh, but there must be a pilot.
No need for one of those these days, ma'am. The company automated routine shuttle trips to cut costs.
Oh, something seems to be wrong with the patient. His chest seems to be rising. That does not look natural. I hope Gareth can help him. What a lovely fellow. He's going over to see if he can help.
Just a little closer.
Ew! There's something alive in that man's chest! It's coming out! What's Gareth doing? He's trying to open the maintenance locker.
I never expected him to move so quickly.
Oh! Oh, Latimer, a thing's come out of that man's chest! Gareth has his back to it. Turn around, Gareth! What is he doing?
He's fashioned a flamethrower from a welding torch and oxygen cylinder. Crude, but effective. That creature is burning quite nicely.
I feel quite ill.
Peppermint, Mum.
I can't look. What's happening now?
He's putting the body of the patient and the remains of the creature into the airlock.
Oh, thank goodness. Perhaps his name should be Gareth Lively Powell.
Or Gareth Lucky Powell.
I'm sure the rest of his journey will be uneventful. Well, dear guests, thank you for joining the lovely luminary Gareth Powell and I today. The next time we take tea together, we'll be joined by Francis Harding. Last week, I asked for advice on what to send the Goblin King as a thank you gift. I'd like to raise my teacup in respect to Paul, who suggested a magical instrument as Gareth is so fond of music. Well, I saw another friend of mine who happened to have an enchanted flute in stock, which the king adores. It does have a rather interesting effect on those who listen to the music, which I think will entertain him for a long time to come. Before we catch our flight off the colony, no patients on board, I promise, I have another question for you. In return for the loan of the colony as a temporary tea lair, the company asked me to send them a sample of any alien life forms. Dear listeners, I'm rather concerned the company may not be the most ethically minded corporation, and so I'm loath to send them something they could use to harass puppies and small children. I'd be very grateful if you could suggest something harmless that I could pass off as a sample, long enough to get away from them as fast as possible. All suggestions are welcome, particularly the outlandish and comedic. Do be dears, and leave your answers at www.tnjeopardy.com. I'll pick the best one and share it with you the next time we take tea. Well, until next time, my rose petals. Now, Latimer, find a new location for the secret tea lair, would you? Perhaps somewhere less alien.
Very good, Mum.
You've just listened to an episode of TN's Jeopardy, hosted by Emma Newman. Go to www.tnjeopardy.com to find out more and join in.